Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, through our friends in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, or those joining us on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106 Live. We're glad that you could be with us as well. We're excited to welcome Stephen Dinan to our program today to talk to us not only about his new book, Sacred America, Sacred World, but what it's been like for him as the CEO of the Shift Network to be able to get people to looking at themselves, their place in the world, and the world in general differently. If you just I'm hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Stephen, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Cyrus. It's a pleasure.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. You know, this book is really interesting to me, I think, for a couple of reasons, because even though it's called Sacred America, Sacred World, it really is, I think, in a large extent, focused on the latter part of that, the sacred world, and our own individual part in being able to create the world that we want for ourselves. What has it been like for you, Stephen, not only through the Shift Network to be able to share that message, but also through this book to help people to be able to look at their place in the world differently?
Well, I think that what I've been finding is that there's a lot of resonance in many different quarters. You know, I've spoken on progressive radio, it's sort of new paradigm radio, I've done TV, I've done a bunch of conservative shows as well. And there's really a hunger to reconnect with something that is deeper, that's more filled with love, that's more filled with reverence. We've gotten acclimated to a public culture, particularly around politics, that's so toxic and so polarizing and so filled with the kind of hate and marginalization and demonization that it's like people are really hungry to connect on a heartfelt level to what they really care about. And that what they care about is creating a world that works for all. It's not just self-interest. It's really there's a hunger to say we can do better, that we can create an America that is a truly shining example of what's possible, and that we can actually create a world that is peaceful and sustainable and healthy and whole. We don't have to be cynical and jaded and assume that we're just going to keep repeating the worst of what we've been doing for a long time. It's really there is the opportunity now to make a huge shift to the whole paradigm of how we're doing things.
Right, and I think that's it. And I think it also you encourage us, and you do this through your work with Shift as well, Stephen, but you encourage us to look outside of our own, you know, self-imposed boxes. One of the things that I thought was really interesting in the book is that you talk about when it comes to the political aspect, the importance of looking outside of a party to be able to create what you want and be able to accomplish what you want. And even for those who may look at themselves, as you talk about in the book, as outsiders to the major parties, the importance of realizing that we all can still work together. You know, you are very open, I think, in the book of allowing us to see that, you know, even though we might have a certain way that we're used to thinking about things, that we have to be willing to at least be open to hearing from others. When did you realize the importance of that? Because I think for our audience to really get this book, I think they have to understand that this is something that you have worked on, you then share through the Shift Network. When did you realize that it wasn't just about what Stephen Dinan wanted, but it really was about what the larger picture could be able to accomplish?
Well, it was kind of in a gradual emergence. I was very active in 2004 on the Dennis Kucinich for President campaign. In many ways, I was where a lot of the Bernie supporters are this year, like fiercely committed to like my candidate who's going to bring all the changes that are needed. And it was very disappointing when he didn't get enough traction to really make a dent. However, we did it did awaken this kind of deeper idealism. And what his campaign allowed us to do is to bring our whole heart and soul into the political process, which is something people were really hungry for. And that's something that's really happened in the last year with Bernie's campaign, too. People have been totally passionately engaged. But then you have to get to the stage where I think you have to see that change happens fairly gradually for a large culture. It's a big ship that we're trying to turn in the right direction, and that we have to invest in not only speaking our truths and championing things we want to see, but actually learning more deeply from other people. For me, part of the shift happened when I tried to launch a version of the Shift Network and basically went belly up and ran out of money, $65,000 in debt. And at a certain point in the whole journey of coming to terms with that, I realized I needed to learn from conservative business people, some like how they were being so successful in their businesses. and I was stopped resenting people for being able to build strong and healthy businesses, but also to say, okay, there's a different set of principles and practices that I just may need to learn. So I talked to my father-in-law, at the time he wasn't my father-in-law yet, but about mentoring me in business. He was a conservative Republican, and he thought I was sort of a new age wimp. we ended up having a good connection, but at first he was really tough on me, and he said he wouldn't mentor me unless I managed to survive 3 months of mixed martial arts, which is essentially, you know, UFC style street fighting. And so I took that on, and I took it on not just for 3 months, but actually for a year and a half. And he ended up mentoring me in some really substantial ways. And I feel like I joked that I needed to integrate my inner Republican in order to create the Shift Network. It doesn't mean what we're putting out there is our, you know, more conservative values or ideals. You know, in many ways, I'm still very loyal to my more progressive roots and ideals. But I learned that there's some disciplines and wisdom and skills and values on the right that were useful to integrate in myself, and actually to think about issues of growing our culture and shifting our systems in a way that integrates other viewpoints. And so I came to just the same way we've ultimately seen that diversity can be a strength when we really honor it and can listen to people and create enough space for diversity that's either ethnic diversity or religious diversity or even like global and international diversity. We haven't really applied that same logic to politics and where we really sit and learn from each other. So, you know, I've done things like, I took the time to read both of Sarah Palin's books. When I found myself hating her every time she was on the TV screen, I really read, and it made me think more deeply about like certain things I took for granted. I was just at the Republican National Convention. I'm now at the Democratic National Convention, but I was at the Republican National Convention partially there to just do some political cross-training. I was on a panel with Grover Norquist, who's pretty, you know, diametrically opposed to most things that I believe in. But I was trying to find some common ground and see if we, you know, for instance, we could make some progress on gun control. And so there's a way in which I think we can meet and honor respectfully people who are very different from us, and we can actually learn from their position in a way that strengthens how we can talk about things. Like if we can learn to talk about the $15 an hour minimum wage or criminal justice reform or or trade deals in a way that speaks the language of the right, we may actually get more progress than if we're just, you know, rehearsing progressive values and arguments for something.
Right. I think that is so true. And you mentioned your, at the time, future father-in-law, Stephen. It reminded me of something that you wrote in the book. As we're talking about these differences, I think, you know, it's so obvious for and easy for us to talk about politically, but you also discussed the gender differences and how that is still an issue in this country. You know, it's always interesting to me to see when people are discussing polling, to see the difference in, you know, male voters from female voters or likely voters. One of the things that you address in the book is about that, and one of the lessons that you learned from your wife. Talk to us about that, about the importance of being willing to listen to others that may not only think differently than us, but also who may find themselves in a different place in the world than we do, and why important it is for us to be able to hear what's going on in their world.
Well, I think that, it's really important, I think, particularly as men, that now that we integrate and deeply appreciate the feminine, because it's part of rebalancing our culture and coming into a real sense of wholeness. And if we're not able to do that, then we're ultimately not going to be able to create the kind of culture that we want to create. And since our political culture in particular has been heavily skewed to the masculine side for pretty much all of our 240 years of history, it's really important that we learn how to bring more of the feminine into the political culture, both as men and in supporting women. And so some of that means a deeper kind of listening and receptivity and collaborative bridge building, rather than just kind of trying to assert our opinions more in a more dominant way that really is just like, okay, this is my way or the highway. It's like there's a kind of a collaborative spirit that I think women often have in a stronger way than men. And it's if we take that in and really use that in a good way, then it balances out the more assertive nature of men, which can be a great value and asset too. So we want to bring out the nobility and courage and the power in men, but do so in a way that's balanced with the feminine so that then we create a really healthy society. Just the same way when you have a healthy balance of masculine and feminine in a family, it creates a healthier and happier family.
Right. Again, a great conversation piece for sure. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Stephen Dynan is our guest for this segment. We're discussing his book that's already a bestseller through our friends at Amazon.com. It's called Sacred America, Sacred World, Fulfilling Our Mission and Service to All. Stephen is also the CEO of the Shift Network. And again, you know, going into the idea of working together, you address that in a big way in the book about, you know, one of the things that I think is so important for us to remember with not talked about a lot, but it's in chapter 17 of the book. This is what you wrote, Stephen, and we'll talk a little bit about it. One of America's gifts to the world is our optimism, but that gift can carry a shadow of indifference to the plight of others, especially those we perceive to be our enemies. Once someone is in the category of enemy, we convince ourselves of the need to be heartless and brutal, strong-arming the opposition into submission to make us, quote-unquote, safe. Perhaps the most unfortunate part is when America's martial attitude is paired with a dedication to Jesus. Jesus' most central teaching was to love the enemy. This teaching is at the sacred core of his work, challenging us to open our hearts so wide that we exclude no one, even those who attack or wrong us. Instead, we are asked to forgive those who wrong us, not just 7 times, but 70 times 7 times. I wanted to share that because there is a very strong spiritual element to this book, and I think it's so interesting in a nation that is proclaimed to be a nation under God. Do you think that is one of the things, though, that when you look at the current political climate, that sometimes gets lost in that you know, you have even in, oh, and I thought about this in a larger way, that not only in this country but around the world, there are individuals who fight against each other in the name of God. What has that been like for you to kind of get us to look at differently?
Well, I think it is just a case of actually putting the founding principles of this country and of most every spiritual tradition and lineage into practice. Politics is one of the most charged arenas in which to put these principles into practice, and it's really easy to go unconscious. I talked to so many people on tour who are people who have been deeply dedicated to a spiritual path, who really want to be vehicles for love, and they almost all confess that they've experienced plenty of hatred and demonization when it comes to politics, because it's a charged arena. I've done it myself. I'm not being holier than thou here. So it's really easy to forget these deeper teachings. And so what I'm trying to just do is simply remind us that we are made of something better, that we have a higher calling, that our spiritual leaders and teachers and pioneers have pretty much all said the same thing, that we have to learn how to bring everybody into our hearts and not create separation and not demonize and not focus solely on the negative in others. We have to connect with the divinity in their core. And that's, you know, that's been the secret sauce of Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Mother Teresa or Jesus. And they all get to the point of saying, you know what, I can see and love even the enemies, even the people that seem very different. And when we do that and we apply it to politics, it does uplift us in different ways. You know, I feel like part of what the first night of the Democratic Convention last night, there was some incredible aspiration to put love into practice. Cory Booker had some soaring riffs on putting love into the center of our politics, and Michelle Obama did the same thing. There's a way in which when people do that, when we bring that into the center of our politics and blend the spiritual and the political, it uplifts us. It reminds us of who we are and a higher calling and a higher destiny. And so it's not like I'm putting out something totally new with that. It's just a reminder to how do we put it into practice. And it means occupying the 100%. It means not demonizing the millionaires and billionaires. It means not demonizing Republicans or Democrats. Or it means, you know, within whatever movement that we make a concerted effort to say how can we evoke the highest in whoever is on the other side of a divide? How can we relate to them in a way that doesn't compromise our principles and the goals that we want to accomplish, but does so with more dignity and respect for the other side? Because that's ultimately what lifts it up. You know, Gandhi and King, if they taught us one thing, it's that we have to lift the consciousness on both sides of a divide, because that's the only way the culture ultimately evolves.
Exactly, for sure. So, you know, as you've been, you know, already going, and I noticed some of these conversations when I was prepping for your segment, Stephen, you know, what has it been like for you to see people get it, and to not only get it, but to be able to start thinking about themselves differently and what they can contribute differently to this conversation?
Well, it's been exciting, you know, and I feel like when people really get it, they often have this kind of epiphany of like, wow, I've been treating politics differently than the rest of my life. I've been applying different principles in how I engage politically to how I want to like create a community and create a family, and that's ultimately not what's needed. So, people do. There's a kind of a miraculous healing when they really say, you know what, the story that I tell the story of like really taking the time to dismantle my hatred of Sarah Palin and to find the divinity and the place of respecting her. People laugh at first that I did that, and then they really touched, and then they're really motivated. They're like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to take on doing this with Trump. I'm going to take on doing this with Bush or whoever. Do we take on doing this with Hillary? Whatever is the real polarization in their own heart. And recognizing that all of this hatred back and forth doesn't really help us evolve. It doesn't help us go to the next level. And you know, we can be discerning. It's not like we, you know, I'm not turning into a Trump supporter, but I can find the place of seeing where people respect and honor him, see areas of his mastery, see areas where he has value to contribute. And I can still be discerning and say, you know what, he's not my candidate. I don't think that's not the direction we need to go. And I can be a strong Democrat, but I can also create bridges with Republicans. I mean, I was at the Republican convention, and I felt like there's a lot of people who are really open to creating change together rather than simply a kind of a political food fight.
Yeah, there is, I think, a level of optimism that one feels in reading the book Sacred America, Sacred World. You share it in a big way, I think, Stephen, in the chapter 33 toward global governance. You write this, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about it. We have a track record of scaling, evolving, and improving a democracy while addressing emergent issues and complexities. We also have experience in what it takes to balance national government with the power of states, which will be useful in designing the balance between global governance and nation states. Obviously, we could not be the exclusive or sole leader in such an effort, but then you wrote this, but I am confident we can help find a pathway to make it successful. What is it that keeps you optimistic? What is it that keeps you confident, Stephen, that we can do it if we really want to?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, our history is that we have overcome amazing obstacles on so many different levels. I mean, just take slavery alone. Like I've read about some of the early abolitionists in the 1820s and 30s. And it's like they were lonely characters going from town to town, trying to preach that this was not who we were, that we needed to abolish slavery, that we needed to recognize the dignity of all human beings. And they were beat up. They were run out of town. It was hard going. And then you look at the Civil War, and we overcame one of the worst injustices in history. Like, that was a big deal. We've overcome, bad movements overcome, getting women the right to vote, getting basic safety net in place for poor people, for old people. We've overcome some enormous obstacles, and we've faced down a war with Hitler, who was, like, really one of the darkest leaders in history. And we've done these things. So the changes and challenges that we face right now are not actually nearly so large as some of the ones we've already overcome. So I have great faith that we can and will overcome them. And I also am I'm in contact with so many amazing people doing great things at a grassroots level. It's part of the Shift Network. The blessing of it is that we're getting to showcase these amazing people who are living in a more conscious and enlightened way, who are reaching out and creating powerful grassroots changes. And so when I take all of those things that I see happening, and you know, many of which I include in the book, I see we don't actually have the problems that we face are not insurmountable. We can turn things around in terms of peace. We can turn things around with sustainability, economic empowerment. The elements are all there. The innovations have pretty much all been created. It's just a matter of us shifting enough of our consciousness and opening enough of our hearts and working together in a more collaborative way that we really can fulfill this higher promise. So it's I don't I think it can be discouraging if all you do is watch the national news, because the things can focus heavily on the darkness and the murders and the mayhem, and there's a lot that is challenging on the surface. But the deeper currents that are emerging are truly magnificent, and when we can focus on those and amplify those and interconnect those, I know that we can break it through to a whole other level of potential for America and really the whole world.
Yeah, I think that is it. You talk about in chapter 20, I'll wrap up with this, Stephen, in the chapter Lifting Through Microfinance, you say, from a sacred perspective, we are all working together on the project of co-creating a better world. For us to act in a way that undermines the health and well-being of our brothers and sisters undermines not only them, but ourselves. And I think, you know, that is the big thing, to realize that we are not an island, that we all are in this thing called life together, and that we really should be trying to work to be able to unite people, to bring people together, and also to make life better for everyone, not just for ourselves. And I think that's just one of the main things that people will get away from the book. Again, we've been talking with Stephen Dynan today. He's the best-selling author of the book, Sacred America, Sacred World, Fulfilling Our Mission and Service to All, released now through our friends at Amazon.com. You all can get it there. And Stephen, how can our audience find out more information about you and keep up what's going on with the Shift Network?
TheShiftNetwork.com. Get on our list. We got a ton of amazing, inspiring teachers, leaders, pioneers coming out all the time. Next week, we've got an American Citizen Summit, 45 different leaders talking about how do we bridge these divides, go to the next level. We have stuff that's spiritually oriented, peace oriented, enlightened business, holistic health and wholeness, all kinds of good stuff. So get on our main list and also get the book. And I do a lot of chronicling of innovative solutions. Had a lot of people tell me that, you know, reading the book, it's the most hopeful they've felt in years. And it's not just it's not just hope for the sake of hope. There's a lot of practical strategies about how do we create real change too.
All right. So make sure you all definitely have bookmarked that site again. TheShiftNetwork.com is that website. Stephen, great conversation with you. Thank you so much for the time today. Looking forward to having you back on the program again.
Great. Thanks, Cyrus. It's been a pleasure.
And we thank you. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Stephen, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. We've already tagged Stephen actually on Facebook and Twitter as well, so you all can find him there too. So head over to our page at facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.